Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with a cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and Carlos is, again, not on the show because his friend was having a birthday party, and a hungover Carlos didn't watch the event, so it's down to just me. Wow. So I've just finished watching UFC on ESPN 31, or UFC at Vegas 5 from the Apex Center. Oof, what a butchered card. Before we even get to the matches, this card, it just seems to have been jinxed from the, basically the middle of the week right up onto to fight night and to literally seconds before fights. Firstly, earlier this week, we had Eric Sparsley having to drop out of his match with Marcus Perez due to problems with his medication from a previous bout. Then we had Ray Borg having to drop out again, two fights in a row where Ray Borg had been unable to fight. So that left the card pretty threadbare going into fight night. There was literally just 10 fights on the card. Then we got to the actual show, and two more of those fights dropped because we had Gerald Mershaw having to pull out of his fight because he contracted COVID, and that was literally 10 minutes before his fight was due to be on. And then we got the fight that was going to open the card, Kevin Holland taking on Trevin Giles, and as they were preparing to walk out for the opener of the main card, Trevin Giles collapsed and fainted, which meant that fight was called off. So going from a potential 12 fight card, we actually ended up with 8 fights total on the card. So just going through these prelims pretty quickly, we started with Chris Gutierrez and Cody Durden picking up a decision draw. Then we went into the featherweight division with Jamal Emmers picking up the decision over Vince Cachero. Then Johnny Munoz picking up the decision victory against Nate Manez. And then the first knockout of the show was Jonathan Martinez knocking out Frankie Sand in the third round. Yeah, so going on to the main card, we started with Bobby Green taking on Lando Venato, rematch from the 2017 fight. Yeah, and this was always going to go in the kind of style that it went in. It was literally two people wanting to punch the shit out of each other's faces. Both were just absolutely just blow for blow trying to match each other with the kicks and with the punches. The first round was quite an even round, to be fair. Venata did well to stun Green, and Venata ended up stumbling to the mat, which kind of saved Green's bacon almost. But then later in the round, Green was able to floor Venata with a punch. But Venata was able to quickly get up. A lot of clinching up against the fence, but it just seemed that every time that Green tagged Venata, Venata was damaged more than when Venata was tagging Green. And you could see the damage on the face of Venata. His nose was bleeding quite heavily from the end of the first round. Second round was a lot of the same. The only difference was from the first round to the second was Venata started to put his hands up a lot more in guard, trying to protect that face, where Bobby Green was just as flippant and confident as he normally is with his guard, arms down. The shit talking from him was just unreal. He clearly wanted that smoke. A lot of the a lot of the same kind of action that happened in the first round continued in the second round, where people where Venata was landing shots, so was Green, but it just seemed like Green's were a little bit more power behind him. Both fighters did tend to slow down a little bit in this round, and Venata was started to use his leg kicks a little bit more, but it was Green who again was just doing more damage. He was landing the jab. He was able to get in and out of Venata's pocket. These two just wanted to just lay waste to each other. Going into the third round, Venata kind of realized he needed to do something to kind of pull this victory out of the bag. The first two rounds you could potentially give either way, but personally I give both the first and the second to Green. Felt that he landed more shots. His significant strikes were a lot more efficient than Venata's. So going into the third, Venata really needed to do something to pull out of the bag. But again, it was Green that was kind of dominating the pace. And a big elbow from him floored Venata. Then Green ended up pouncing on him and kind of got into almost a half guard. But Venata was able to try and almost butterfly to make sure that Green was unable to kind of lock that guard in. But once they got back to the feet, Venata tried to kind of like back away from Green to get his breath back, and it just led to Green taking Venata back down and had him in half guard. Venata was again able to push Green off, and with about a minute or so left on the clock, they both started to land and clinch again. But yeah, it was Venata tried at the very end of the round to almost like put himself in the judge's eye with some flashy manoeuvres, but it was all to no avail. It was a very unanimous victory. One of the judges gave it a 10-8 round. So yeah, Bobby Green picked up the unanimous decision, and a very well deserved decision. Going into the second fight on the card, Randy Brown taking on Vicente Luque, and this was just the Vicente Luque show. It was a really dominant performance by the Silent Assassin. Randy Brown, even though he was quite significantly taller than his opponent and had a much longer reach than him, it felt like he was too nervy, and he didn't know how to use that extra kind of length and that range to even keep Luque at bay or to give him something to think about. Luque was able to come in and out of Brown's pocket quite just at ease, his own free will almost. Luque landed some very technical hard shots. Brown did land a couple of shots of his own, but Brown did swing a right, and so Luque connected with the hard right after ducking Brown's shot, knocked Brown to the floor, and Luque was able to pounce and get in guard. It was Luque tried attempted to posture up, then just basically allowed Brown to get up, because Luque clearly wanted to fight the fight to stay on the ground. And there were a couple of times in this fight where Brown was on the floor and Luque just backed off to let him get up. He didn't want to engage in a grappling game. He wanted to finish the fight. So going into the second round, and again it was a lot of Luque kind of just dominating Brown, not really feeling confident enough with his own shots and his own power. He tried a bit more to keep Luque at bay with the leg kicks, but when Brown was throwing the leg kicks, Luque was quite happy to throw them back and sting Brown with his own shots. But it was in the punches and the elbows that made the difference. Brown seemed to be slowing a lot in this second round, and Luque was teeing off, but Brown was able to dodge quite a lot of the shots. But the end came when Luque started landing more and more of those leg kicks. He was able to catch a kick from Brown's body, which kicked the leg, and then Luque was able to kind of force Brown up against the cage. And then Brown tried to put his hand down, because one of the rules of the Nevada State Commission is if you've got a hand on the floor, you can't knee the opponent. Well, whilst Brown was reaching for the floor, Luque had the great wherewithal to hold Brown up by the neck to make sure his fingers couldn't touch the ground, and then landed a sweet knee to the face, which absolutely just floored Randy Brown, followed up with a few punches, and it was called off. It was a great refereeing decision by Mark Smith. If watching it at normal speed, it was debatable whether the knee was legal, but then with the kind of ability of watching it in slow motion, you can see that it was such a well played technique by Luque to be able to use that knee when he knew that Brown was looking for a way out of that clinch, and yeah, landed the knee perfectly, followed up with a few punches, and picked up a great victory. So then going into the co-main event, wow, Joanne Calderwood, for a little bit of context, in this flyweight division, Joanne Calderwood was almost guaranteed to be getting the next title shot against the very, very dominant champion, Valentina Shevchenko. But an injury to Shevchenko meant that match was kind of delayed for a while. So Calderwood, wanting to stay busy, accepted another fight, which a lot of fighters will tell you is a risky thing to do, especially when you have been guaranteed a title shot. It's almost kind of like you've got nothing to gain from taking the fight, especially when it comes to a fighter as dangerous as Jennifer Maia. Jennifer Maia, the Invicta, former Invicta flyweight champion, got a middling record in the UFC. I think she went into this fight 2-2, but she has picked up significant wins, especially the one against Roxanne Modafferi was a real highlight. So this was Jennifer with everything to win, and Joanne with everything to lose. And unfortunately for Joanne, I know she's made the wrong decision. She's going to regret taking this fight bitterly. From the very first second, Maia looked the more energetic fighter. She was bobbing and weaving a lot more. Joanne Calderwood has clearly got that Muay Thai background, but what that means is her head stays very, very central. There's not a lot of head movement, where Maia was very bouncy, and she was able to avoid the shots of Joanne Calderwood, but know exactly where her head was going to be, because like I said, there was no head movement from Calderwood, so she was able to pick off quite a few jabs that were unanswered. Calderwood went to her wheelhouse of trying the kicks. Maia was able to defend those quite well, and then pop off her own little jabs, and you could see that she was gaining a lot of confidence very quickly. Maia attempted to do a front kick to the face, which was caught by Calderwood, and then Calderwood was dragged her to the mat, and she was on Calderwood was on top, trying to work Maia into a submission position up against the fence, but Maia was very, very sneakily creeping up the left leg of Calderwood to get position for a triangle choke, and Calderwood just didn't seem to react to it, which was quite worrying for someone who's got quite high level grappling skills. She didn't seem to be too concerned with Maia kind of transitioning into the triangle. But then once Calderwood was then in full guard, she was able to pull her arms out of danger, which meant that the triangle choke wasn't there anymore, but her arm was left in place for the armbar, which Maya just snatched that arm, tightened it up. Calderwood really did try to adjust and try to combat the Harper extension of the elbow, but unfortunately there was just no letting go from Maya, and she upset Calderwood. She took that title, snatched it away from Calderwood, and it's looking very likely that she's put herself right in the frame for a title match. So well played to Jennifer Meyer, and yeah, sometimes it just does not pay to accept them fights when especially when you've got a guaranteed title shot. So yeah, I think Joanne Calderwood's going to rue that decision. So then going into the main event, which wasn't going to be the main event, it was actually going to be, if you listened to last week's show, it was actually going to be Holly Holm against Irene Aldana, but Irene Aldana picked up a COVID infection, so that fight ended up getting scrapped. This was Edmund Shahbazyan taking on Derek Brunson. A lot of hype around Shahbazyan, obviously. We've been told over the last week or so how hyped he was in terms of being Ronda Rousey's teammate. Ronda has waxed lyrical about him all week, saying he's the most phenomenal fighter that she's ever worked with. He was the person who was always there for her in her open workouts and open sparring. And yeah, it was just kind of Edmund coming out of that shadow of Ronda and trying to make a statement, and Derek Brunson being just the animal of a fighter he is, and trying to ruin the hype train, trying to run the hype train off the rails of Shahbazyan, and he was very much able to do that. First round, it was a weird first round. Shahbazyan was landing quite a lot of good shots, and he kind of stunned Brunson. Brunson's usually the person who kind of tries to dictate the pace in these fights. He's obviously got that very vicious knockout power. He's the kind of fighter who always wants to go forward. He always wants to control the centre of the octagon, and it was more Shahbazyan who was controlling. And when he was landing some shots, you could see that they were stinging. They were stinging Brunson. Brunson tried to keep Shahbazyan at bay using a lot of kicks. When Brunson got into kind of survival mode after eating a few shots from Shahbazyan, he went for a takedown. But whilst taking Shahbazyan down, Shahbazyan was able to land some pretty hefty elbows to Brunson. So Brunson tried to lean on Shahbazyan to kind of tire him out, but Shahbazyan was able to get back to his feet, clinch Brunson against the fence, turn him around and able to escape. But Brunson quickly landed an elbow on the break. But yes, Shahbazyan looked very aggressive. He was able to land a lot of shots. He was able to rock Shahbazyan. He was able to rock Brunson. There was a point in the fight where Shahbazyan accidentally kicked Brunson in the groin. And to be fair, all the way through this card, there were so many nut shots. It was unreal. And in quite a few of the fights, there was multiple nut shots. So then once Brunson was able to indicate that he was fine and didn't want to stop the fight, Shahbazyan just went ham on him, and he was just missing a lot of his shots, but just throwing a big amount of heavy shots. He landed a knee, but it was a kind of counter by Brunson, who grabs it and pushed Shahbazyan against the fence. Again, Shahbazyan was able to out-muscle Brunson and circle away. So, the first round, it was very much a close fight in terms of shots thrown and action, but Shabazin was clearly the harder hitter, the more accurate hitter. So the first round I thought was a quite an easy round for Shabazin. Coming into the second round, Shabazin landed a body kick, which sounded horrific, but it just Brunson just seemed to be able to walk through it. He ended up throwing a his own body kick and then landed a punch in retaliation. Then Brunson used his wrestling skills to get Shabazin to the ground, but Shabazin was able to get back up. Brunson tried to land a few shots on the get up, and Shabazin was able to escape and kind of recompose. Brunson then clinched Shabazin up against the fence. Again, Shabazin was able to just out-muscle Brunson, which is a shock, really, because Brunson is a big, beefy lad in this division. And, yeah, for him to be out-muscled by someone who looks very slender was quite interesting. So Shabazin was able to continue with the leg kicks, but then Brunson landed a knee, and this was kind of like where we started to get the turning point. Brunson landed the hard knee which kind of rocked Shabazin, but Shabazin was kind of still throwing almost like in muscle memory to get the shots, but Brunson could kind of smell the trouble in the water and was able to then grapple Shabazin to the canvas, got in some side control, and he leaned on Shabazin so much that he kind of wore Shabazin down. Shabazin lost his back position but was able to kind of recover it, and but that left him in full mount, and Brunson was just able to ground and pound. Landed so many big shots, really damaging Shabazin, getting to the very last seconds of the round, and Shabazin was just getting pounded in the face. The klaxon went, but just as the klaxon started, Brunson landed one last big shot, and it looked like Shabazin was clean out. It looked like he was absolutely asleep. So when you talk about being saved by the bell, this is the biggest example of it that I can even think of. It took him a very long while to get to his feet. We got to the beginning of the third round, and Herb Dean called a timeout because the doctor was concerned about Shabazin's reactions in the time between rounds. Shabazin, being the fighter that he is, tried to alleviate the doctor's concerns, and the doctor allowed the fight to continue, where to anyone else's eyes, Shabazin was literally, the lights were on, but nobody was home. The doctor should not have let him come out for that third round. It was clear he was incapacitated. How his team let him come out is beyond me. The guy was literally, he was punch drunk. He just had no sense. I would not be surprised if he couldn't get words out, because he just looked absolutely not there. Comes into the starts for the third round. He did his very, very best to avoid getting any kind of contact with Brunson. He was just backing up and backing up. Brunson come out very, very aggressively, really knew that this fight should have finished at the end of the second round, and it was definitely going to be finished in this round. Brunson was able to catch a backing up Shabazin, muscled him to the ground, landed a few very weak looking strikes. I mean, if Shabazin wasn't as injured as he was, these would have been absolutely these would have been annoyance of shots rather than fight-ending shots. But Herb Dean realised he'd seen enough, and, yeah, that's Derek Brunson picking up the victory. And good on him. And yeah, just really poor decision by the doctor to allow that fart to carry on. And what was his team thinking about letting him go out and fart? But yeah, Derek Brunson picks up the third round knockout and makes another statement in that middleweight division. So yeah, we have UFC pretty much all the way through August. Next week's event is quite a decent one. So far it's got quite a few matches, fights set up, whether they'll make it to the fight, who can tell. But on the prelims, we've got the feature prelim is a quality fight. It's Laureano Staropoli, the Argentinian, taking on Tim Means, and we've got Nasrat Haqparast taking on Alex Munoz. Going on to the main card, Bernal Dariush opening the main card against Scott Holtzman. We've got Jana Kunitskaya taking on Julia Stolyarenko. The co-main events, Amare Akhmedov taking on Chris Wildman. And then the main event, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, taking on the Boa Constrictor, Alexei Olenek. So, yeah, tune in for that next week. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos at Kirby_Carlos. I'm sure he'll be back next week. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end. Adios.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.